Hello, this is Mark Cummings, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
Hello, welcome. We're back. Series 5, Episode 1 of Cherry Jam. Football still hasn't quite come home, unfortunately. Nearly. But more chance of that coming home than rugby at this point. Anyway, I'm joined this evening by Russ Brooks and Jim Harley, myself, Ed Price. Loz is not available. Snowy is in Ireland. All our best wishes to Snowy, because he's had to endure a bit of a shocker today with the triathlon in Cork, Ironman in Cork, in which two people died. Best wishes to Snowy. I know he's fine, but not an ideal Sunday for Snowy. We will be talking about many things this evening. First of all, Jim is going to give his thoughts on the kit launch and the open day that occurred a couple of weeks ago. And then we're really going to get into how shite England are and the World Cup, and how it's a really good job that four of the five of us aren't going to Lille twice in the next month and a half.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, we're going to get really drunk. We'll start off with the open day on the 12th of August. Crikey, it's already over a week ago. Jim, you attended. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the day and your thoughts on the kit. Russ, I'll get your thoughts in a second as well.
So I got down there probably about an hour and a half in, something like that. Mm-hmm. If I remember rightly, the kit launch was due to be 12:30 and it started at 11, and I got there 20 past, something like that, which was kind of a plan, because I didn't want to be spending all day there, and I had a few other things on beforehand and after. And I think in my timing, I managed to miss the women completely. They were there, I think, for like the first hour.
Yeah.
Doing some photos. So they've got like their new signing chair, I think they mm-hmm. refer to it as, kind of the sort of leather armchair that people were getting photos and stuff with, and people were getting photos with the trophy and stuff like that. So I think that was really good for a lot of the young fans. Missed all of that. And then it was kind of just into your standard community. I mean, to be fair, the number of staff there was obscene. I think it must have been all hands to the pump. Anyone yeah. that has a job at Kingsome, as opposed to with Freeman's, was there in uniform. I mean, there were quite a few Freeman staff there, obviously running the bars and what have you. But mm-hmm. It kind of made me think there's an awful lot of people behind the scenes at Kingsome. There are loads with the community team doing different bits and pieces. They had a few inflatables and things like that. Big Doug had their little stall in the middle with a couple of freebies. Got a free ice pop. Thanks for that. Yeah. And then obviously the kit launch. And I think there was some issue because it was quite windy. And I think just the orientation of the speakers in relation to the wind meant that the noise didn't travel. It was kind of getting blown in the opposite direction.
So, I mean, it is Kingsome, and that is a speaker system. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. obviously, this was all done. For those that didn't go and haven't seen any photos or anything, it was all done in the car park.
Car park, right? Yeah.
Rather than letting us anywhere near the hallowed turf plastic. And that made perfect sense, really. The lorry trailer that everything was being done in. They had a few live bands and stuff like that. And then they got the players on it. And I kind of didn't even notice that the players had come on and shown off the new kit. Honestly, I mean, I wasn't like,
you're drunk.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't drunk at all. But I wasn't at the front of the stage listening to all the chatter. I was wandering around, seeing all the sights, trying to get all the free stuff. Went to the shop. I went to the shop after. I'm guessing they opened the shop at 12:30, like immediately after
with the kit. Yeah,
they'd announced it because the kit was, the shop was racked full of the new kit. I think the weather was potentially going to be bad, so it made sense for them not having rails outside, but it made it bloody tight. getting in the shop.
It's a small place. It's a small shop, and
yeah, it was
to
a
be
real
big
small
enough.
shop. So potentially they could have done something and had a pop-up shop, or just not had everything on the rails. Like, have stuff for sizing, and then you just go to the counter and say, "I want a small, I want a medium, I want an extra large, I want a 12XL, whatever." Because yeah, it was just that was just a little bit awkward. I felt as someone that went in but didn't actually buy anything because they didn't have the players' weights still. But that's me moaning.
That's your pet peeve.
It is my pet peeve. And it's also a lot of other people's pet peeves, actually.
Yeah, 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 I agree.
A lot of the photos, the guys on stage were very shiny in their replicas. But a lot of the social media photos, they're in the players' weight kit. And a lot of people are going, "Oh, the collars are different," which has been the case for decades
It's
now.
Always the same, yeah.
But, you know, it seems silly. And someone messaged me and said, "Oh, I asked Oxen, I emailed them, and they're not doing the players' weight for retail purchase." And I emailed them, and they said to me, "Oh, yeah, we stuff just gets drip fed, and when it's in the warehouse, then we put it online for sale." And it seems a bit like we've had that. We've had the home shirt, which is great. I really like it. It's got all the kind of City Crest-esque bits in gold down the sides. So it's quite a bit different to some of the previous ones that have had that thin black line with the cherry and white hoops. So I think it's different enough from similar looking shirts, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
To be good. I know we've been privy to the other designs.
Yeah.
And I think they're probably trying to sell as many of the home jerseys as they possibly can before they release the others, because I don't know whether it's going to be the European or whether it's going to be the chain shirt, but it is a banger.
The away shirt. Yeah.
Is it,
the away
is
shirt
that
is an
definitely
absolute.
The away?
The mainly
is,
white
then
one.
That means the one that looks very similar to the European shirt from a few seasons ago will be the European shirt again.
Yeah. So the.
Okay.
The...
But I think that one will be really, really popular because it's quite different. I know we had the kind of marl grey one.
We had the grey. Well, we had the marl grey one. There was the grey and white hooped one from about 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
It might even be a little bit less than that, but we won't give it away at the moment. But we've been given a bit of preview information about it, and on the basis that the home kit is exactly how it looked when we've seen it, the away kit is an absolute pearler.
It's real classy, and I think it'll. Probably unleash, because Oxen are pretty good actually. They don't fall short when it comes to the amount of stash.
No.
And they'll churn stuff out all through the season. They'll drip feed, you know, the t-shirts and the polo shirts and stuff like that. So I think we will see a whole range. We've seen a whole range that's black and gold, which I think is really, really good.
Yeah,
I think
really,
we'll
really
see
nice.
Another whole range based on probably both. See, because we've seen a bit, is there a bit more purple stuff as well? Like the heritage is more than just the shirt.
Yes,
right
there is
thinking?
A little bit more.
Yeah. So I think we're going to see stuff based on the chain shirt and stuff based on the European shirt as well, just to kind of pad out all that range, which would be really good because it's all money to the club. So I'm all for that. And so that's kind of the shirt. I think everyone's had a good chance to see it. There's certainly plenty of photos if they haven't had a chance to see it in the fabric. But other stuff at the Big Summer Bash, or whatever they referred to it as, I got to go into the new 1873 Bistro, which they
launched last week, didn't they?
Yeah, so that's basically giving not just 1873 ticket holders, I believe it's totally separate to the actual to the sort of seating that you get with the 1873. And it is basically available to purchase meals, etc. So you can make yourself a reservation pre or post match and get yourself in there and have some food. And if it's anything like the canapés that they were giving away, and I was quite happily sampling, it's a bit fancy and it's quite nice. So
where is that? Is that the old, what I would call the cathedral bar? So the middle, the mid tier
yes.
bar, or is, yeah.
Yeah. So okay. You gain access To the right of the ticket office, and you go in there. There's a doorway to the right of the ticket office. You go up a flight of stairs,
Yeah.
and it's quite a long, narrow bar.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's got a brilliant view of the car park. If there's anything going on in the car park that you want to look at, but you don't get a chance to see the pitch or anything like that.
No, yes. So for people who have been to Kingsland before and have been to hospitality, it's not the top bar, which you would probably have frequented if you've gone to any forums, etc., or things like that. It's the one that's the middle tier. And you could gain access to that at the back of the stand. So if you come out of the back, if you go up to the top of the main stand and just walk in that way, that's that bar, not the top bar with all the hospitality boxes.
Yeah. But it's quite narrow.
Mm.
Just because, you know, that's how much space it's got, obviously. But I think well, I'd like to think it'll offer a totally different kind of menu to obviously what Freeman's offer, you know, with your pasties and chips and hot dogs and such like. So
yeah,
if you're going for a special occasion, if it's a birthday, you know, an anniversary, that sort of thing, and because it's going to be a little bit more expensive than a pasty or a burger, then that could really be a nice option. So hopefully that venture is successful and they do get lots of bookings and people enjoy it. So yeah, good on them for kind of highlighting all of that. There are a couple of other little stalls. Stouffer Press were there doing some samplers. I was like, oh yes, let me sample what Stouffer Press tastes like. Thank you very much. What else was there? I think that's about it really. I mean, it wasn't the biggest thing. And they did pack up. I think it was supposed to finish at 4.
Yeah.
And by 3 o'clock, it was all packed up.
Okay.
I'm guessing because most of the people had gone.
Gone, yeah.
And the weather had started to turn by 3. That we did have a couple of monster downpours. But yeah, I think everyone I spoke to lots and lots of people. It really was a bit of a reunion for kind of Gloucester fans because it's the first time we've been back since
it's a while, isn't it?
The end of the season. Mm. So it was really nice. Caught up with a load of guys I stand with in the shed and things like that, which was good because I went on my own, not really expecting to see anyone I knew. And actually, it turns out, like going to Kingsland for the best part of 30 years, you end up knowing quite a few people, don't you?
Yeah, I do. So
it was it's a good atmosphere. Everyone, and I mean everyone, seemed to be really, really happy. There was like a really good vibe. Luds was milling around kind of in the bar long, long after the rest of the squad had finished their signing duties, which, by the way, the queue was just bonkers for.
Yeah, I saw some pictures. Didn't I think see, you took a few.
I didn't see the squad at all because they were like the far end of the bar and it was just rammed. So, you know, I would like to think that means that lots of kids got lots of posters with lots of scribbles on and they will go home and put them on their walls because that's what it's all about. It's about gaining that interest, and hopefully lots of those kids will be pestering their parents for, you know, match tickets, and hopefully we can start getting some slightly better gates next season off the back of some of this sort of fan interaction that's been going on.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Jim. Really appreciate that. Russ, just to get your views on a few of these things. So first of all, the shirt. Now, I know we had a bit of a preview ourselves, but your view on it?
I went in the other day to the Keys and had a good look at it. I like all the stash. I think all the stash is really good. What I really like is they've got more of the cycling shirts back in. So I'm very tempted to get one of those as well. Annoyingly, and I think because it's popular and also the boy is a pain in the ass, he won't sit still for 10 minutes. I couldn't find one that fit him, but I think that was more just logistics. But no, I really like Jim said, I really like the new home shirt. I like the gold on it. It stands out enough. It's different enough to make it worth having. Really like the heritage shirt. I know lots of people have compared it to a previous one, but I don't own that one, so I like it. So I'm buying one. I really like the Four Edge shirt. I still want to get it. I'm basically, it's going to be an expensive year for me, I think. The only thing that worries me, and I know Jim's been really positive, I worry about us having a gold standard shirt and not delivering bronze standard rugby.
Bronze standard would be fine. If we finish third, I'll be more.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, you know, it all joking apart, really impressed with the stash and all the stuff they're doing off the field. It's certainly fought through. Funniest moment for me was fans being fans, someone moaning that they wanted naturally produced products for the shirt. So I'm really disappointed Gloucester haven't got a wool shirt out available. That
cotton
was my thing.
It's not naturally produced.
I think I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't think they'd announced at that point that the cotton shirts were out.
They literally on the website.
No, it was
Jim. Don't expect
the
people.
The one was released at the same time, and there's still people moaning. Oh, but
yeah, don't expect
people
to read the website, Jim. Yeah,
you can get a cotton one in long sleeve and short sleeve.
I know.
In fact, I'll be honest. This is the one thing I would say, actually, just a quick note aside, Russ. Thank you very much for bringing up the cotton one, because actually it was one of my little notes that I'd put down. I don't normally, but since we've moved away from the cotton shirt and gone into the sort of plastic polyester stuff, I very rarely have not bought the cotton shirts. Now, one thing I would say is I've seen the cotton shirt short sleeve, and I have to be honest,
really nice. It looks
superb. That's particularly what I was... because it didn't have a sponsor on it.
I saw it in the shop, and and the Heritage one I really like. I might get the Heritage one in cotton, buy the home shirt. The only thing that worries me having a toddler is it's probably going to get destroyed, particularly a cotton one. So that's literally it. But it's really good.
Heritage is stain-proof, isn't it? Because it's black and purple.
Exactly. That's a good point. But yeah, it's really nice. Just fans will be fans. But like the collar thing, like Jim said, that's been done to death for years. But no, I really think one of the things the club has got right is the stash they're putting out.
Yeah, the kit's been really good the last couple of years, certainly. And the 150th stuff almost universally is
they've put a lot of effort really into good. It, because I think it could easily have been underwhelming, couldn't it? Because of the level of expectation of it. Everyone's just like 150 year, we've got to go big, it's got to be massive. And fair play, it looks really good so far. I really like the black and gold stuff that we've seen so far.
Just following on from what you said earlier, actually, Russ, about the 4Ed shirt. It's quite nice that the shop is still full of those. So
yeah, I really want one. It's just getting round to, like I said, at the moment, my brain is just indecisive on which one to invest in first.
Well, actually, on that point, Jim, because I was away, I don't know if this was done. So obviously last year when they released the shirt, you could opt to have Slater and number 4 on the back of the shirt. And I think it was like an extra 5 or a 10er, and it went straight to the 4Ed.
It was an extra 10er and a 5er went to the 4Ed.
That's it. Are they doing anything like that again for the shirts
this
year?
There was something at the Keys, and I must admit I didn't clock it properly because chasing a toddler. There was some sign about getting something printed on the shirts and there being a donation of some sort. I didn't read it properly, but I would assume it's going to
similar
the
sort of thing. Yeah. Okay.
And aside, while we're on about Ed Slater, if anyone hasn't listened to it, his podcast with Sam Roberts is, not to detract from ours, but it's absolutely
well, no, it's a much better podcast.
Absolutely brilliant. I listened to the first one, which is Sam interviewing Ed, and it's one of the most honest and open rugby interviews I've ever seen. Someone with real self-awareness of his career and place in rugby. And some of the later ones are really good. Alex Good was a really good one. And he does talk about being FKW after they win the trophy, which was
I think you're
funny.
Allowed to be honest, if you win the league, don't you?
Yeah, but no, that was a really funny story. I remember us being very amused by it at the time when he was still in the pub in his kit down to the gum shield. But yeah, it's a really good listen, that one.
Highly recommend it. Thank you very much. I agree. Very happy to plug Sam and Ed's podcast, because it is superb. It really is a brilliant listen. Right, we're going to pause now because we will be talking about Gloucester in more detail in a couple of weeks' time. We were going to have an interview with Alex Brown actually to launch the season, but for obvious reasons, and we'll come on to this again later, Alex is now taking on the CEO role at Gloucester, and he's a little bit busier than he was probably when we arranged the interview. So that's now booked in for just under a month away. So that'll follow on shortly, which we'll get into a bit more about the 150th year, Alex's career, and obviously his new role within Gloucester and other things. But we'll obviously cover off Lance and his departure as well. But we're going to pause now, come back, and we are going to talk about England, the World Cup, and oh my God, how bad it is.
Hi, I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Right. Despite me being in Italy, I was unable to avoid the absolute car crash that is English rugby. I did miss the entirety of the first game in Cardiff, but got some lovely updates from you boys. Thanks very much for that. Then I watched the game at Twickenham with the whole Farrell incident, etc. And then watched this weekend as well. Russ, let's start with you.
Trying to be positive this year.
Okay.
And, in all seriousness, I have very, very limited expectations of England at this point. I also have very, very limited availability to watch rugby at the moment. My boy has the concentration of a goldfish. So when I get to sit down to rugby, I want it to be worthwhile. That first game, my God, I think there'd been a long enough break from watching England to delude myself that maybe they'd show me something to buy into the World Cup.
Well, they've been in camp excited for like 2 months.
Yeah, and honestly, they can just get in the bin because they literally took my hope and didn't even just kill it. They fucking murdered it. And just, it was dross. And I think there's just enough. I don't know what our game plan is. And I'm fed up of seeing the bullshit come out from pundits. Hartley yesterday, I honestly wanted to throw my shoe at the telly because it was the only thing I had to hand. Oh, well, they've probably got some stuff they're holding back. But if that's the stuff that we think is all right, fucking hell. We've scored 2 tries in 4 hours against a Wales team that South Africa was scoring for fun against.
Yeah.
We bring on the most creative player in the team and we stick him at fullback, and then he's made 2 line breaks. So they're probably bin him for fucking looking creative and making the other mugs look half about. It is just, I just don't know what our game plan is. And, you know, they're actually making me think that Gloucester are good to watch with some of the box kicking. That's how far it's got. Because at least Gloucester, I can watch it and go, I don't like what you're doing, but I kind of understand where you're going with it. But
there's a limitation with Gloucester because of players' availability. England exactly. don't have that.
And at least with Gloucester, I'm going to contradict myself. Last year I said you can't blame injuries, but we, like you said, Ed, you went with what you've got. England have sent most of the best players home. It's probably a good job that no one sees our WhatsApp when we all saw Mercer was binned and Val then went, and you're just thinking, what rugby do they watch? Because I just don't know. Or do they watch it and go, God, they look good. No, don't want that. And I think my final point, so I don't rant too much. What this World Cup's gone. There is no way that I realistically believe we can win this World Cup. By the way the groups are structured and the format, we could somehow get to the semis, which blows my mind that they could.
Yeah, I'll come on to that.
I pissed myself because I read somewhere where Austin Healey was like, well, in 2007, we got there. The difference, I think, was that group had something. They had
Well, they've already won it. I mean, there was at least a half of that team had already won the World Cup.
There was ethos.
But they were also strong enough characters having won a World Cup.
So that's the thing. This is,
fuck you, boss. We're not doing it that way. Yeah. And have a revolt and actually get away with it.
So this is
this bunch haven't got that.
This is what annoys me, Jim, is you can blame Borthwick to a point, and I, you know, it baffles me that he's managed to make Eddie Jones
look good.
I'd take him back.
No.
But in all seriousness, the only good point that Hartley made was that is the most experienced England team in a long time. The amount of caps
in history,
they cannot just blame the coaches. They should be able to play heads up rugby. But I don't see them doing what they did in 2007 because I have never seen a team disconnect from the fans so much. I mean,
so quickly.
I know we're coming on to Farrell, but to see them try and close rank and see all the old players go, but poor Owen, you're hurting his little feelings. Fuck off. Because you're not winning anyone over with that. Everyone can see it should have been a red card. You're not winning your fan. It's like they're trying to alienate the England fans even more. And all I'd want to see in this World Cup is us try something. This World Cup's gone. Let's do what I've bemoaned in the past. Let's use this to develop players ready for the next World Cup, like people like France have done, like Ireland. Let's play a long game here. But instead, we announced the World Cup squad weeks ago, and we're stuck with the shower of shit we've got now, unless any more of them manage to get sent off against Fiji, which is a distinct possibility, and we run out of money to pay for the QC.
Or get injured, which is probably equally as likely.
There's nothing inspiring about it. Genuinely, like, all joking apart, I do feel for your boys having to go and watch it. I'd love to go over.
Oh, no. But, don't feel sorry for us. We're going to have a wonderful time. The rugby's
two hours in a long weekend, Russ. I feel
more sorry. I actually would feel more sorry for me because I'm going to get a small window where I can sweet talk my wife and be like, no, I just really want to watch the rugby. And then she's going to dump the toddler back on me. And I'm not going to have drink to numb the pain of watching this shit. And I'm going to have to deal with a toddler. And if I don't have an aneurysm, I'll be amazed. But yeah,
to be fair, you're right, because we're going to go and watch a burlesque show afterwards.
And it's as low as I felt as an England fan, I think. And I lived through some of this shit in the 90s, you know, early 90s.
Right. I'm going to come to Jim in a second. I just want to have my little rant, mild rant. So the funny thing I found watching England, particularly yesterday, was up until just before the Vunipola red card, I found myself sort of sat there looking at it and going, we're still in the game because, number one, the set pieces, particularly the line out, is actually very good. The scrum is all over the place because, well, as we knew before, Stewart can't scrummage. Apart from he magically learned how to scrummage for three games at the end of the season, and therefore everyone thought he could. He can't, and he never could. And that's why he shouldn't be in the squad, but Val should be. Anyway, that's another thing. The back row is massively unbalanced because, number one, even before he was sent off, Vunipola's too slow. So he was getting to rucks far too late. He was half the time not anywhere near a ruck. He was kind of off some on the wing somewhere. Ben Earls is the only player I think I've seen of the entire the summer series so far who's done himself any credit. I think he's
He needs an angry wank every time someone else knocks on.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'll come on to that again at the end. That's more of an annoyance that you find when you're losing. But he's the only one who's, I think, come out with any credit. I thought George Ford actually had an okay game, bearing in mind he didn't have a huge amount of ball to play with. But the biggest issue is, whenever there were two things that stuck out to me on both the two games I've seen, which is the Wales Twickenham game and the Ireland game, it's the attention to detail. And this to me is driven from coaches and from the whole setup. The best example I can give for this is there was a ruck, sort of 34 minutes into the game. Ben Youngs rolls the ball back. Now, we see it all the time when you're setting up for a box kick, you keep it underneath the leg of the back row or player who's bound on and use that, and then that allows you to, you know, box kick it away. The ball gets rolled back. It's nowhere near underneath the leg of the player. The ball's out. Now, the referee didn't notice at that moment. But the ball's out. If a player, if an opposition player, and you can guarantee if you're playing anyone decent, they're going to notice. When we get to the quarterfinals, if we England get there, which is a remarkable thing to, I think, I have to say in the first place. But say even Argentina, right? You can guarantee the Argentinian back row or scrum half is going to be absolutely eagle-eyed on that ball and where that ball is. That's an easy turnover. That puts you under pressure. It's the little details. Like things like when the ball's coming off the back of a off the back of a line out, the ball came to, again, I don't want to pick on Ben Youngs, but it's an easy one because he was shite. Ben Youngs got the ball and he took two steps before he passed it, which meant the entire England side who were at depth were now flat. So he only had one option, which was a shovel pass to the left to Ben Earls or Vunipola, who then gets nailed on the line, on the gain line. And we're now going back. We lost all the impetus. If Ben Youngs gets the ball and chucks it in the foot, you know, immediately, we've got depth. We've got people running at pace. Ireland's defence isn't entirely sure. The number of times where Ireland had three, four options off every single ball carrier, England had that maybe once or twice because it's pass, 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 bush through the middle, pass, 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 bust through the middle. Oh, nothing's worked. Kick it. It's crap. It's awful rugby. And but the annoying thing is it'll be enough to beat Japan, to beat Chile, and to beat Samoa. Argentina is probably a toss-up, bearing on, but, you know, I don't know what will happen on the day. England get to the quarterfinals. There is as much chance that England get to the semi-finals of the Rugby World Cup as Ireland get knocked in the quarters because of the way the draw is. That's how stupid this World Cup is. And it's so, it's actually hilarious to me. Jim, I'll come to you now, mate. Just your views on, let's go for Vunipola first. Is there any mitigation at all? I'm going to say no, by the way, but you go ahead.
I'm going to say mitigation-wise, there's potentially a smidge more than there was for Farrell. I think there was a little bit more change in height, but nowhere near enough. He had his arm. I mean, that one.
He's got his arm tucked.
That one camera angle is just like horrendous. He's got his right arm like down by his side. He had no intention of ever trying to wrap it. It was.
It's a hit, isn't it?
You know, for two very different physique guys, it was almost carbon copy. The previous, it's almost like it's what Saracens do in training.
It's almost like Saracens do that all the time just to get away with it, though.
It's just lazy.
I was berating him all game, like literally from minute five all the way to that point. He's done England a massive service
in
getting himself a red card, almost certainly not traveling with the team because he was awful. He is nowhere near the fitness required to be playing international rugby. He was so slow. And I think only now, when you've got someone like Ben Earls on that is just lightning, as back row should be, it makes him look even slower. But previously, when he's been playing with, you know, other pretty big, heavy, slow back row players, he's been made to look just not quite as quick as them. But what really annoyed me, kind of in all that really, really quite poor analysis post-game, when they're all kind of about, oh, and he's the only dedicated eight in the squad, and who would they have replace him? They only mentioned Don Brandt.
Yeah.
And like, we've got the best number eight in Europe.
But this has
already been knocked out of the squad, and everyone went, well, that's fucking stupid. If you want a new number eight, and in fact, I think Don Brandt's probably good enough to go compared to the others.
But he's better than Vunipola, but I mean,
you've got to take Mercer now, surely. Yeah. It's not worth the risk of taking someone that's that bad and almost certainly won't play the first couple of games.
The assumption you're making, and my biggest problem with all of this, the assumption you're making, Jim, is that we won't appeal it and somehow in the fucking lottery that is the process.
What game was it where someone went to the bunker?
So South Africa. It was a South African on the Welsh player, I think, in the corner. Clear as day, a red card. clear as day a red card. And this is my problem with the bunker in a way, because what you're seeing straight away is,
exactly.
The refs owning it. They're not owning it. If it's a clear red card, back yourself, make it a red, because at the very least it's a yellow. Bunker can it's wasting.
No, you can't make it a red.
Sorry, yeah, all right.
I get the idea, just to speed. And the idea is, it was all that speed.
Yeah,
just give me yellow.
For the idea.
Give me yellow. Pretty sure it's going to end up being a red, but actually it's someone else's decision.
But
back on with the game.
But it was a red, and we all said that, didn't we? We're like, he's in trouble, and it'll be interesting to see what happens now if and they come back and say it's a yellow, and you can see that element of doubt is there now because of the foul precedent, and it's a joke. And there's been a few like that where it's just weird decision making.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jim.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I've got a friend who's in discipline, and he had some information because he's one that complained to the RFU and saying it's not acceptable. It was like, yeah, don't worry, you're not the only one. Every single county has complained to World Rugby. Every single country has complained to World Rugby. So that's why World Rugby, which I don't think they've ever done before, have they?
They've never reviewed a review.
I mean, that Farrell.
But they can. And so that's why they've done it. But and what I said to him, and he pretty much agreed, having all the paperwork, I said, the issue is, because this bunker system is so brand new, what's happened is the bunker referee basically hasn't shown their workings. So when you've got the likes of Barnsley on the pitch, he goes through his list.
Yeah.
Talks about mitigation, talks about all of this. What the bunker official, I believe, and the massive report kind of alludes to, is that basically they've gone, yep, you're right, it's a red card. What they haven't done is written down or recorded their verbal conversation. So when it goes to the court case, you get your KC come in and goes, well, you haven't taken into account the mitigation from the second tackler, which is irrelevant because there's no change in height with the second tackler.
No.
But because they haven't written down that they've taken into account the mitigation potential from the other tackler, and it has resulted in there is no mitigation, because they haven't written it down, they can't prove that they didn't take it into account, and therefore it's been thrown out. And that is where this bunker system is so brand new that officials aren't quite up to speed. That will not happen again.
You hope not. I mean, it just makes, why do we have a system where you can have briefs, you can have QCs in the first place? The process should be the same as it is most sports. You put the man in place, or the lady, whoever, go through the process. Have you got good disciplinary previous? Yes, no. How do you feel about it? Are you even sorry? Are you contrite? Here's a decision. I just find it weird. If Jamie George's push has had that much impact, that's the most impact Jamie George has had on a game in a long time.
The interesting thing about it's quite funny, I think, actually, that rugby in particular has got, like, alongside the American legal system, has got one of the highest levels of conviction rates legal, however you want to call it, quasi-legal thing. That it's almost remarkable that the only person who has got away with it happens to be Owen Farrell. Just a quick clear side on this. Yeah. This is, I think, Jim is entirely right. The reason why, not just opposition supporters, not just this is why I think it's very, very, you mentioned the alienation around England and the team and all the rest of it. So under Eddie Jones, towards the end of the Eddie Jones era, there was a lot of alienation with the team because fans were getting very frustrated with Eddie Jones is a bit of a prick, right? Let's be honest. Let's be 100% honest about this. The shtick that he gets away with, which is, he did it again in an Australian press conference last week, which is, it's all about, oh, he's bringing the pressure on himself. It's not about, he's trying to take the pressure off the team. No, he's just a bit of a prick. There are people like this, right? We were in a situation where fans were basically booing the England team because it was so bloody awful, and they were fed up with Eddie Jones, and they thought, you know what? It's easier to get rid of him, and we'll... Right. I don't think any one of us thought Borthwick should be the first choice, right? Let's be, you know, again, none of us thought Borthwick was the first choice, but we understood why he was brought in because of he'd done well at Leicester. He knew the system. He coached under Eddie Jones, so he knew the player. It made logical sense. We just didn't think it was the right decision. There was a lot of goodwill, particularly the top end of the Six Nations, towards Borthwick, because they felt you're not going to have a huge amount of time to turn things around. You know, you are stuck with the players you've been stuck with. So the likes of Val, the likes of Mercer, and others who probably should have been in the squad but weren't because of the restrictions around who you could bring in because of the England selection restrictions. So again, lots of goodwill. People were willing and to give Borthwick a chance. And what is remarkable is I don't think I've ever seen a coaching setup and a team lose that goodwill and confidence so quickly. As I said, it's not just the away supporters who are frustrated by the Farrell overturning. It's England supporters, because this isn't the first time this has happened. Farrell got away with one a couple of years ago against South Africa. He's got away with, let's be honest, he got away with one against Gloucester. I know we're a little bit biased about this, but other supporters, even Saracen supporters at the time, were like, yeah, that's shit. That's shocking. And it's another one. It's just another example. Again, we say it every time. Player does something stupid 2 weeks before Six Nations. How often do they then get off or get a one-week ban?
It's a running joke, isn't it? That's not even a joke anymore. No. I think, and what annoys me about this all is setting it aside as an England fan, club rugby, local rugby, is taking a hammering at the moment.
Yes.
It's been absolutely shit on, and no one is happy with the new tackle laws at that level. And what's the first thing we see at international level? I mean, I watched in real time, that was as clear a red as I've seen. And it's been thrown and undermined straight away. And it's no wonder that people are going, this is ridiculous. We're going to be hung out to dry on these arbitrary laws. They don't apply at a higher level. So it's straight away, there's limited goodwill anyway, Ed, because a lot of people are struggling in the local game. Your clubs are genuinely worried that this is going to have a massive impact on their player base. Yep. What's further disappointing is Owen Farrell hasn't once come out and said, bad shot, really sorry. Not that I've seen. And what I really hate is this close ranks, like, all right, Andy, you're his dad, and yes, you're going to protect him. But he's not had anything that bad. I haven't seen anything that is genuinely personal.
No, they're talking about personal
abuse. Nothing personal.
No.
There's no personal abuse. There's people going, oh, it's him again. It's hard to argue that point because, like you said, he has previous. I have no criticism of Owen Farrell as a person because I don't know him. But his tackle technique
is
questionable. Billy Bunipola's is questionable. And it doesn't matter that they both play for Saracens, because England have enough time with them. They've been in camp enough to go, this is how we want to lay down the door. And the bit where I lost it was they interviewed Courtney Laws, and I thought Sonia McLaughlin was brilliant.
The final question was genius.
Final question where he was like, I'm not going to talk about tackle height. And she's like, but you tackle low and hard so well. And you could see he was literally by himself. He had
and someone who suffered from concussions from bad tackles.
Yeah, he had no answer to it. And that's what they're own it. Just go, look, guys.
That's the media training, though.
It's disappointing. And it's ex-pros, Hartley. Even Tins has come out and said stuff about it. And it's like, guys, read a room. The fans are not on their side. You've got to do something. And this is what I mean. Like, you tie all that in with the I like Itoje a lot, but at the moment I do find that, if it's a knock on by the opposition.
Yes.
And I get what people say. No, I can see your face, Ed, and I get about generating momentum. Generate some momentum.
That's not the issue I've got.
But generate some momentum by putting in a fucking big hit or making a good break. Don't get carried away by little things. Win the fan. Actually, I just want to see some bloody effort. Martin Johnson started his England career notoriously and got binned and he was derided. He won people over by just working his fucking nuts off. And that's all I want to see from this England team at this World Cup. I'm not expecting... go out there and show me something. Work hard, win us back over. That's all I want from this World Cup. Give me some reason to buy into you, because it's really hard at the moment.
So I take that issue regarding the celebrating the small win stuff, which is obviously generated. I think Saracens were the first club really to really embrace that. And obviously, you know, and other clubs do it, Gloucester do it. One of the things I find frustrating is the rhetoric around it is, I think, driven a little bit by anti-English stuff, because actually the French do it, the Irish do it, every team does it. It's just that it looks a bit silly when you're celebrating a not straight at the line out, like you just won the bloody World Cup. That is that's just daft. But I think there's been a lot of play on this in the media in the last couple of weeks, because England aren't playing very well. And it looks silly because we're not scoring tries, we're not creating a lot of opportunities, and you're celebrating a knock-on. It looks silly, but actually every other team does it. It's probably not much of a big deal. It's just that it's an easy clickbait thing, really, probably more than anything else. But I take your point, Russ. It does look stupid. I totally agree with you. Jim, on the sort of the style of rugby that England are incorporating or trying to play at the moment, I say trying. Again, I totally understand your point about you don't understand the game plan. I think I do understand the game plan. The game plan is basically Leicester stroke Saracens from about 8 years ago, Leicester from 2 years ago, which is give the opposition the ball, smother them in the defence, and then live off their mistakes, which is kind of what you do when you've got you haven't got a huge amount of talent in your back line, which isn't the case for England. But anyway,
I mean, it all boils down to a bad game plan and bad selection, doesn't it? Mm.
So, Jim,
and we've got players, if they don't play to that bad game plan, they are lucky to be benched, because otherwise they're out of the squad. And I think that's probably why Zach Mercer's not in the squad, because he is a player that plays what's in front of him.
Yeah, 100% agree.
And he'll go, well, that game plan's shit, I'm not going to do that. And then he won't do it, and then he won't ever play for England again under that.
And that's the problem. But that goes back to 2007, like you said, Jim, and the big difference, because that player group sat down, didn't they, and went, this isn't working, let us try something. But you don't have that. That's just not how it works anymore, is it? And that is unfortunate.
I think is, I could almost understand if you're a squad, if they hadn't announced the squad, right? And like Wales haven't announced the full final squad, and you're playing for your place at the World Cup, I could kind of understand the players just toeing the line for the meantime. But on the basis that the squad's been announced, so what's the worst? You're not going to play. Well, okay, well, let's be honest. The chances of the chances of you getting selected, even if you're disobeying what Borthwick says, are pretty high, because half of them are going to be suspended and a few of them are going to be injured. So I don't understand now the England players. If you can clearly see it is not working, which it is not working, you must be having conversations and saying, look, we have to change something. Now, ideally, Fiji is not the team to do that against. I would argue that actually the game plan that England tried to incorporate is probably the best game plan for a team like Fiji. You don't want to be loose and you don't want to be harem scarem, because they will just pick you off. I mean, Fiji looked very good against France yesterday.
Yes, they did. And I think they'll really, if they improve, which they should, they should
gonna
be better.
Yeah.
But it
is Wales.
They're
going to
really, really test England, and they will be absolutely out for the scalp.
But it's a mixed bag, isn't it? I think the one thing that France did quite well, I didn't watch the whole game in the end, but I think what France did well, it is very different to what a lot of teams do this day and age. They built a score. First few penalties, they kicked. So I do agree, Ed, you don't want to go hare and scare them. There are ways to play a team like Fiji.
Oh, no,
don't kick the ball. It's an annoyance with both England and Gloucester. And it's just like after 10 minutes, France had three penalties. They kicked a lot. Yeah. Yes, you need a good goal kicker, but England have got good goal kickers. they put pressure on in the right areas. They attacked the rucks hard. They were attacking the scrums. They went after Fiji's weak points. And yeah, you, but the, so the problem, what worries me with England against a team like Fiji and to an extent teams like Argentina, Japan, is it only needs one loose kick and they can punish you.
And I think so you, I think Argentina is the one for me.
I agree. We should Samoa, beat Japan.
Japan. I'm very confident we'll beat Japan. I think we'll probably beat them quite easily. Actually, Argentina. I could see us beating Argentina. It depends on the day. It's one of those 50-50 calls. The Samoa game worries me a little bit. In that, if Samoa have got something to play for,
yeah, I agree with that.
I would worry there, but. Overall, I think.
But I just, yeah, I think what I get. So my point is, I guess, is they need to change something. I don't know what that is, because it you can't play a game as one dimensional as England and then go full tilt the other way, because there's not enough time. But I just like, if you built a score that allows you to then be a bit more expansive, because it's teams can't give away penalties because they know you're going to punish them. And I think you made the point in the build up to the pod is, why doesn't this kind of game plan work anymore? I think it's just, for me, the one thing I find weird is the build a score has gone away from rugby. And I think one of the reasons it hasn't worked for Gloucester recently, and why they have to move away from it, and hopefully they will with the coaching recruitments they've made, is rugby, it only works for a certain time having a game plan, and then teams find you out and adapt to it. And that's what happened to Gloucester. People realise, right, they've got a really good maul. We need to cut the source off. And I think with England, they know they're not going to kick. They're going to put this, sorry, they're not going to kick the goals, but they're going to put this pressure on. If we find a way to neutralize the kicking game, that's half the battle done. And that's what's happened to England. That game plan just doesn't work.
If you notice, the sort of the game plan really is for Stewart to do a couple of up and big up and unders for Stewart to get under, or to get the wingers under, or Stewart under. Of course, the problem is with that is that if Stewart doesn't win it, he's out of position. There's a whacking great big hole in the backfield. Oh, look, territory.
50-20, Bosch.
Yeah, and also the fact that just the final sort of kind of point about discipline, because I think too often we talk about discipline as red cards, yellow cards. England's penalty count under Borthwick has been absolute. I mean, it was bad under Jones, don't get me wrong, but it's been atrocious. And the number of... If you're on your line and you are throwing your body on the floor to stop the ball coming out quickly, to stop a, you know, that's a penalty which I can kind of get behind. That's fine. That's a cynical penalty, been done for generations. Leicester were brilliant at it in the 90s and early 2000s. Saracens are very good at it now. If you watch New Zealand, very good at it. I mean, that was basically what Richie McCaw did for an entire career. But they're not the penalties I worry about. The penalties I worry about are the ones on the opposition 22, when they're not going to do anything. All they're going to do is kick you the ball back. And Mara Itoje, who I generally and genuinely think is one of the best players in the world, is one of basically our best player overall, gives so many daft penalties away. Like, you don't need to compete every single time and start nudging the bloke in the air. You're going to get the ball back. Just use a bit of the top two inches.
Pick your battles, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's far, far too many. You know, and you can see it now with rucks. We're really quite good at being disciplined and not hitting every single ruck. Hmm. And then the ones that we do, we really go for. Although sometimes you really go for it and they go, oh, yeah, that ball's just about to be there to be taken. And then they back off. You know, it's like, well, if you're going to go for it, go for it.
Go for it, yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, it's the coach killers, isn't it? Those are those silly penalties that...
There's nothing anyone can do about it.
Stop all the pressure that you've been putting
on. There is something you can do about it, Russ, and that's, again, it comes down from the top. And we talk about the tackle technique is an element where, you know, Borthwick turns around and talks about, oh, well, you know, we're really very careful in training. We really drill it into the players, the technique and the heights and standards and all this stuff. Well, if that's the case, why have we had four red cards out of the last five.
No,
six games.
I don't mean it like that. I guess what I mean is, because we've had this conversation, knock-ons, etc., are generated by not buying into a game plan, not necessarily understanding what you're going to do, and the discipline's the same. You don't, I guess the point is more, once, what I find hard is sometimes it's almost like, oh, if the coaching's bad, you exonerate the players or vice versa. Once those players are on the pitch, they are experienced enough and they are good enough to make decisions for themselves. And you can't just absolve the players in the same way you can't blame the coaches for everything. I'm pretty sure, yes, the tackle techniques, not great, but I'm pretty sure no one sat down and went, Owen, what we really need is for you to fucking pull out a WWE wrestling move. And, you know, it's not to that extreme, is it? That was dull. I'm not, you know, it was a poor decision by someone who is experienced enough and been around enough who should know better. And at some point, someone like him has to take some personal accountability, regardless of how nice a guy he allegedly is.
So the other final thing before we finish then this week is a kind of a review of the other Northern Hemisphere teams. So we look at France, you look at Ireland. They are clearly, I mean, France actually had a couple of interesting weeks against Scotland, but this is the whole thing about the warm-ups, that they do seem to be at least building in the right direction. Ireland were very, very, for an Irish team, they were quite inaccurate, but they were far more accurate than the English team. I still think their Achilles heel is their set piece. Line out look dodgy in the scrum. It depends on the ref, but I am absolutely sure what happened to Leinster in the Champions Cup final will happen to Ireland when they get to crunch time against a big side, because I don't think their scrum is up to it, and I think they're going to get found out.
I mean, the one thing I think about Ireland is they are their game plan is more expansive than it was. So they are, going back to the point about game plans, you have to move your game plan on. Some credit to Ireland, they are trying to expand and grow
some
it
of the,
a little bit
some
more.
Of the rugby they were playing on Saturday.
Yeah, that was, you know, an Exeter previously in club rugby. But yeah, I think Ireland have got a bit more added to their game. I'd agree. I don't think they're quite as strong in those bits that you traditionally thought they would be holding their own. Sexton's still a big component for them. They are bringing through some fly halves, but I think there's still a lot riding on Sexton for them. I don't think they'll win it. I just don't think they've got it in them to win it. I stand corrected. I understand why a lot of people think they will, but for the reasons you said it, I don't think we've really seen anyone put them under real pressure. And it'll be interesting to see how they hold it together when they come up against the side in a pressure environment who can turn that screw a bit more than some of the other teams they've come up against so far.
Yeah, and then if we talk about the other Northern Hemisphere sides, we've got Scotland, who've had fair play to them. I mean, they seem to have come alive, but they're so reliant on Finn Russell being a mercurial talent that's the issue. They could go to the semi-final, Scotland, quite easily if they play their absolute best game and Finn Russell is on form. Yeah.
And Van der Merwe, who's absolutely immense. I think he probably is the best winger in the world at the minute. He's probably because Cheslin Colby is actually not looking that great. But it's like, it's weird, isn't it? You think, oh yeah, they're playing the best rugby I've ever seen them play. One of the top teams in the Northern Hemisphere, but they won't do better than the semi-final.
Whereas at the same time, we're saying. England are crap.
Absolutely awful. I mean, but you know what? England have got more chance of winning the World Cup than Scotland, which is doesn't make any sense at all, given where they're at.
I mean,
we've got such strength in depth that we could be crap and blunder our way through and then have a lucky game and then end up in a final.
Well, you do have to feel sorry for Scotland because they've got South Africa and Ireland in their group.
Yeah,
which just means, like, I know World Rugby are going to fix it.
Yes.
But choosing the pools like 6 years before the tournament
and the seeding, it's bizarre, isn't it? Mm. But yeah, I think
let's fix that, please.
That's Scotland's problem in a nutshell, Ed, is Could I see them beating one of those teams in a one-off game? Yes. Could I see them backing it up? No. They're not going to do it twice, are they?
Well, the thing is, they only need to beat one.
I know they do.
Tonga, Romania afterwards, and they'll beat them. They're going to beat Tonga and Romania.
But I guess the point make is they, any other team, you think they get out of that group, their momentum's there. Scotland, I could see them not quite delivering because of talk about the Sexton worry. Finn Russell is I mean, he's a hell of a talent on his day, but it has to be on his day, doesn't he?
I mean, Russell can win and lose a game in the same game, which I mean, he is.
I mean, that's probably going on to France. That's France's biggest worry is they've lost Ntamack.
Yeah. But then they've got
Chalobert. I mean, and even DuPont, they've got good backup. They're a lot loaded. I still think, I'm not as confident as I thought, as I was, but I still think France are the best bet of a Northern Hemisphere team winning it. But I'm not quite as confident as I was because I think some of the Southern Hemisphere teams are
New Zealand look very good, don't they? I mean, just a final thing on, we'll come on to Wales in a minute, because if you think England are bad, and bear in mind we lost to Wales as well, but Jesus Christ. So just a quick note on Ireland, and this is where I think it's unfortunate for Ireland. There's two ways to look at this. Ireland have got two huge games. They've got South Africa and then Scotland back to back. If they get through, you assume they're going to get through the group. They will then play a quarter final against one of New Zealand or France. Realistically, because although Italy are vastly improved, they aren't going to beat France or New Zealand. So that's Ireland of. The possible advantage is you've gone smash, 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 big game, big game, big game. You're in a semi-final. You would have got to a point now where you know you are number one in the world. You've got all that confidence and the rest of it. Or you've just played two, three games where you've been smashed to smithereens by world-class players every single time. And that's the problem they've got.
Yeah, and that's what happened to England. And that's what happened to England in the semi against New Zealand, wasn't it? Absolutely fucked in the final. Had nothing left in the tank.
No. And then the final bit, as we mentioned, Wales. Now, I kind of one way to the other with Wales, because I look at the pool and I look at it and go, I can see them getting through to the quarterfinal because Wales, realistically, should still beat Fiji. They should still beat Georgia because of the time they have in camp. They do have quality players. And those teams, Fiji and Georgia, don't have enough exposure. I mean, Fiji, I think, have only played six games since the last World Cup. Georgia don't get enough exposure to against Tier 1 nations outside of the World Cup. However, Wales' first game on the 10th of September is Fiji. If they lose that game, they are in big trouble. Like, big trouble. Because Fiji then have basically got Wales have got to work on the basis. They've got to hope that either Fiji lose to Georgia and then Wales beat Georgia in their final game or whatever. I mean, it's just, they're in massive trouble. Far more than if England lose to Argentina. Because I can see Wales losing to Georgia. That's how, you know, you could see that happening.
Georgia played pretty well against the USA. I watched that game.
Yeah.
They're more than just a scrum team now, aren't they? Yeah. You've got some good players coming through.
Yeah, Fiji's got far more depth than they have had in a while. And like it normally happens when it comes to World Cup, same with Samoa, you've got 8 weeks together. They actually have a training system. They have a camp. They can kind of actually root out some of the issues if they turn up.
I think you're right, Ed. I think the structure of their fixtures for Wales is, but they needed a couple of games, didn't they, before you come up against feet. The pressure there. I mean, it's a weird situation they're in, aren't they? Because I think Gatland's tried to take some pressure off and acknowledge how hard it is, and you can see he's trying to bring players through, but it's just too late, isn't it? You know, they've got some promising young players coming through. The back rower from Exeter, whose name I can't even dare pronounce. Louis Rees-Sammet, any other time, I'd almost want Wales to go well, because he deserves to light up a World Cup, doesn't he? You know, he's that kind of player. He should be on that big stage, but he could be really over there for a short stay, which is then good for Gloucester. So, but I don't know. I think, yeah, they lose that first game, which is doable, because what you find, Wales have a history of losing to Fiji, and it's all about the pressure of it, isn't it? They don't seem to do well when they stop feeling that bit of pressure. So
no,
that first game is the be all and end all of their World Cup for me.
It's a huge, huge game. And I mean, we talk about the England-Argentina game, it's a big game. If England lose that, it's not ideal. Don't get me wrong, it's a really bad start. But I do think the nature of the pool and the makeup of the pool, we should beat Japan. I still don't see that's going to be an issue. That's when that England forward pack and the whole forward dominance will drive through. Chile is a walkover, let's be honest. Samoa is slightly dangerous because, yes, there's
some red cards in that game for sure.
Well, this is the other issue we've got. I mean, you know, we talk about English discipline, but I do feel sorry for the South Sea Islanders, because they're having to really, really be, you know, drop. They're going to have to massively drop their tackle height, because the nature of their physicality, it's
they've
the way they play.
They've been tackling people in the chin for millennia.
But and I think, but that's why the discipline's so important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you don't want, England have had that against Samoa for years, and those teams are fit. You want them to be disciplined enough to not get dragged into it becoming a big physical affair, ironically, or one where we keep our discipline. And that's the issue in that one. I think the thing that will do for England is, I think Argentina are good, but they're not as strong as they used to be, I don't think, necessarily.
I think the depth is the issue for Argentina.
I can see, it's not a group where you can see one team where you could see some other teams pushing close. I think there's a lot of teams that can take surprising results, or I don't think there's a team that could come behind England if they did lose to Argentina to put quite the pressure on that way.
Samoa Japan's a big game as well. That's another one where you.
But then
could,
I could.
That's
see,
why I say I wouldn't want to play Samoa where there's some. If England lose that first game, that does put a huge amount of pressure on that last game, because you know that. Think you beat Japan, then you got Chile, then you got Samoa last game, but that does mean that Samoa. There's a fairly decent chance Samoa could beat Japan.
I think that was more what I was trying to say. There's a chance that results could be weird in our group, Ed. You know what I mean? One team could win a game, really put themselves in the mix for qualifying, and then go and slip up later and blow that chance. I think our group could. The team that qualifies first might not have the most amount of points, if that makes sense. It feels like a kind of fluid group in that regard. It's not like where you'd expect New Zealand to go qualify with a full whack of points, I think.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. I know what you mean. I mean, look, we will do a proper preview the week before, and also it's going to coincide with the first game of the season for Gloucester against Nottingham, which I think is the same day as the England game, actually. I think it's the same day as the England-Argentina game. So we will cover all of that off in one go. Next week, we will do a bit of a proper review of the women's final, because we didn't manage to do it before the end of the season this year. So we'll do a proper review of the women's final and the way forward for women and the Gloucester women and Gloucester Artery women, I should say, this season. What can we expect? And maybe a little bit of an early preview of Gloucester and our forecast of the season. Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate your time.
Cheers.
We'll be speaking again next week.
Cheers.